publicly since he left the cabinet, but I'm delighted to say he joins me now here in Salford. Morning to you.
Good morning.
It is a brutal old business, politics, isn't it? One minute you're running the country and the next minute you're having to set up a think tank to lobby the ministers that you used to sit around the cabinet table with.
Well, look, politics is a tough business. But I think one of the things I'm coming to understand is that you can push and fight for your ideas from different places inside the House of Commons chamber, either as an opposition or as a government backbench MP. And the Northern Powerhouse Partnership that we're creating today is a great example of bringing the business community together, bringing civic leaders from the different political parties together, and fighting for the regeneration of the north of England, fighting for us working together as northern cities and counties to make the whole bigger than the individual parts. And it's a very exciting new venture which I will be chairing.
We want to talk about the Northern Powerhouse, but just to be clear then, you're not tempted to follow your now ex-leader out of politics and spend some time writing your memoirs?
No, I'm not. I don't want to write my memoirs because I don't know how the story ends. And I want to hang around and find out. And, you know, there is an enormous opportunity now to take part in the decisions that are going to affect Britain. We've taken a big decision, which is to leave the European Union. There are now a whole host of new decisions about what our relationship is with Europe, how we run our economy, how Britain behaves in the world. And I want to be there in ultimately still the place where these decisions are made, the House of Commons, and be part of that decision-making process, because I want to fight for the things that I care about: an international Britain, a Britain connected with its allies, a Britain taking its full share of responsibilities in the world.
Now, first and foremost, that idea, the Northern Powerhouse, is about how we run the economy in this country. You've written an article for The Sun today in which you say the Northern Powerhouse is here to stay. Why do you feel you need to say that?
Well, I think, to be honest, there was a little bit of a wobble when we had the new administration about whether they were still committed to the concept of the Northern Powerhouse. And the concept is not just that the North of England's a great thing. I'm a Member of Parliament in the North, and of course I believe that. It's a very specific idea that the cities of the North and the counties are actually geographically quite close to each other. And if you improve the transport links, if you create new powerful elected mayors, if you make big investments in the science and the culture here, then the whole can be bigger than the individual parts.
But are you sure the wobble is over? I mean, Theresa May's chief of staff, her advisor, Nick Timothy, was one of many who thought the Northern Powerhouse focused too much on a single city, a single part of the country, and that what was needed was a much broader approach to reviving the areas of the country outside London. Now, you may have persuaded her to use the phrase, and I'm told that took a lot of persuading to get her to use that phrase, Northern Powerhouse, but does she actually back the idea?
Well, look, I'm the first to say we need to support economic development across the whole of the country. And by the way, I sweated blood to get a mayor for Birmingham. That was one of the most difficult things that I pulled off in office. And I'm passionate about building up the engine of the West Midlands. But in the north of England, there is a particular opportunity because these cities are close together. And the Northern Powerhouse Partnership that we're creating will be led by the business community. It'll have Labour and Conservative civic leaders involved in it. And I can tell you today that the former mayor of New York, Mike Bloomberg, is going to work with the Northern Powerhouse Partnership to help the newly elected mayors next year get the best experience from around the world to make a success of governing in this part of the country. So to have someone of his experience involved in this is a great start.
Now, there was a wobble, you say, on the Northern Powerhouse. What do you call what happened over Hinckley? Even more than a wobble.
Well, let's start by saying this. I voted for Theresa May to become leader of the Conservative Party as a Conservative MP. And I think she's the best person for the job of the candidates who put themselves forward. And I think she has made a strong start. And she is perfectly entitled as the new Prime Minister to set the tone of her administration, to set out her goals in her own way, to use her own language, and to take a pause and consider big decisions like whether to go ahead with the Hinckley nuclear power plant.
Well, the question then is, what, if anything, changed as a result of pausing and considering? Now, there was, in effect, a sort of special share created for the government, wasn't there, in this power station, which Ed Davey told the World of One yesterday. Of course, he used to be the Energy Secretary. Was an idea he'd proposed and you'd rejected when you were Chancellor.
Well, look, first of all, I'm very pleased that we're going ahead with the Hinckley power plant. I don't think anything has fundamentally changed from the deal that we put together in government just a few months ago. And the good news is Britain is going to have a long-term supply of low-carbon electricity. And we're going to do it in a way where the taxpayer is not on the line, not on the hook for building a nuclear power station.
But this is basically
the same
deal.
Which is full of construction risk. In other words, it can take a long time and it can run over budget. Well, we're getting other people to do it, other partners around the world to bear that risk. And I think that's a really good deal for Britain.
And the same deal, basically, as you had before.
It looks to me pretty much like the same deal. The question then is, of course, security. And obviously, like everyone else in this country, I would want to make sure that our nuclear power plants are safe and secure. It is the most heavily regulated industry in Britain, and it doesn't matter who owns the power plant, whether it's the French, the Chinese, or indeed a British company. We have very tight regulations and rules to protect the public. And when it comes to this debate you asked me about, the so-called special share or golden share, it did come up in 2013, and we were asked the question, should we offer this policy? Should we create a special share? Now, the advice that we all collectively got from civil servants in the energy ministry, from the security establishment, was that the special share would not add any additional protection beyond what the very tough and tight regulatory regime already provided us. You can't run and own a nuclear power station in Britain without the consent of the government. So it didn't seem to me necessary to have some additional special share. Now, maybe the advice has changed over the last few months. I don't know. Obviously, I'm not in the government anymore.
Okay, so nothing fundamental change, you hope, on the powerhouse. Nothing fundamental change, you think, on Hinkley. On grammar schools, something has changed more fundamentally, hasn't it? Do you not think that plans to open up more grammars risk taking this government out of the mainstream?
Well, again, I think a new Prime Minister is perfectly entitled to set out new ideas.
Yet there are some who believe that really Tory policy should be about parents and pupils choosing schools, not schools choosing pupils.
Well, look, I support the goals that Theresa May set out in her speech of delivering a first-class education to every child in this country. I always have thought with the debate about grammars that 80% of the political discussion is about where 20% of the children go, when in fact we should be focusing on where 80% of the children go in a selective system. And for me, the great transformation of the last 6 years, driven by Michael Gove and Nicky Morgan under David Cameron's leadership, has been the Academy and Free School programme. And if you look at what's been achieved, actually under Conservative and Labour governments, in the school system in London, which was the worst 30 years ago in the country, and now is the best, you can see what you can achieve with the Academy programme. So I'm all for, look, you know, elements of selection. I'm not against new grammar schools opening where areas want them. But I think the real focus of education reform remains the Academy programme, transforming the comprehensive schools that most people in this country send their children to.
I think you recognise the words in my question.
Here in the north of England, by the way, that is the big new challenge and one of the things that the Northern Powerhouse Partnership is going to look at. How can we improve the schooling in the north of England?
I think those words that I used in my question are ones that might have just felt a little bit familiar to you, because one George Osborne shadow Chancellor back in 2007 said, we don't believe in schools choosing pupils. We believe in pupils choosing schools. That is where the mainstream of the education debate is, all around the world. So your new leader, the new Prime Minister, has, according to you a few years ago, taken you and your party out of the mainstream.
Well, as I say, I think the focus of education reform should continue to be improving the education that the vast majority of children get. And actually, Theresa May, in her speech, made it clear that she wasn't just interested in creating additional grammar schools. She wanted to make sure that children who didn't go to selective schools were getting a good education too. And, you know, that's, you know, Justine Greening, I think, is a terrific Secretary of State. I've worked with her over many years. And, you know, I felt, listening to her statement, you know, that's the focus of her efforts. And given her background, it doesn't surprise me, because, you know, she has first-hand experience of how state education in Rotherham can transform life chances.
Now, you made it clear that you're not going to follow David Cameron, you're not going to leave politics. The language he used about why he felt he had to leave the Commons was that he might be a distraction. Are you prepared to be a distraction to stand up for what you really believe is in the interest of the country? In other words, when you decide to stay in the House of Commons, are you going to tell us what you really think rather than trying to keep quiet because it might upset the new Prime Minister?
Well, look, certainly staying in the House of Commons, I will want to draw attention to the issues and the causes that I care about. That's part of the purpose of being a member of Parliament. And one of the reasons